The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Klipp Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars, and he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Klipp.
Hi, people. Welcome back. Today I'm going to talk about my dream home, or what my dream home is today at this point in time. You know, as you may have noticed, life changes. And over time, what our dream home is changes and becomes different. 6 years ago, 8 years ago, I had created, my wife and I, the perfect dream home, or our perfect dream home, for a family with teenage kids. The upshot of this story is that my wife contracted cancer, and 5.5 years ago she died. At the same time, or within 2 weeks of that, my 3 kids all left for college, and my life changed. But beyond that, what I had created at that time was really a great home for a family with 3 kids, 3 active teenagers. We had the family living room core, family living core, which is, I've talked about it, it's the kitchen, great room, dining area, that makes up the heart of the house. And we've got, have a really good setup of that family core living area. We have a playroom or teenage space that is not on the third floor of the house. There isn't a third floor, it's a one-story house. It's not out of the way, but the teenage play area is right in the middle of the house. So that, I did another show, is how to set your house up for teenagers and how to give them their own space, but not allow them to escape, to always be able to keep in touch with them and, have an idea of what they're doing and also talk to them on a regular basis. So we had this teenage space in the middle of the house, but with the caveat that it's soundproof. So they can be as loud as they want without, disturbing the rest of the house. And we can pop in unexpectedly at any time just, to talk to them. Also had all of the bedrooms are in the same wing of the house. The house sounds big. It's 4,400 square feet. All the bedrooms are in the same wing of the house. which means that, again, you don't lose touch. To get to the master bedroom, we have to pass the three kids' bedrooms. And, you know, it's easy then to check that they are in their rooms and that they're sleeping. It's easy to wake them in the morning because they're right there. They're not on the other end of the house on another floor. All these things to make a to give each person in the family space, but at the same time to keep a family close together and in contact with each other, connections. Then the last part of this perfect house for teenagers is the master suite. And with, you know, and I've done a couple of shows on this. Both of us were very busy, hardworking professionals. And this was a rock and rolling house that, you know, with lots of action. So the master suite is a retreat from all of this noise and activity. And the whole thing is set up as a Zen-like retreat. Calm, peaceful, a way to get away within this active house. Now it's 5.5 years later. Well, and like I said, this was my perfect dream house in many ways for a family with active kids and then active teenagers. And then quite suddenly I was in the house by myself. There is in mourning a period of time that you should allow yourself to just be and exist, and not really try to figure out too much. So I've existed in this house and discovered all the parts of it I love. And sure, there's some parts I would change now, and there's some things I would do differently given my different family setup. But now it's 5.5 years later, and I'm engaged and about to get married, but the exact when of that is still in debate. And my fiance and I, we have a decision to make. This is a decision that pretty much everyone goes through later in, if they get married later in life, after you've both established your own lives and your own homes. The decision is where to live. And, you know, it's a big one. In this case, the real decision is whether to remain in my house or to sell it and to build a new dream home for the two of us. And she had actually sold her home 5 years ago, just before the downturn in the market, and moved into a townhouse that is nice, decent, but you could call me a snob. You could, having being in this business and living where I do, I frankly have very high levels of expectation for the house I live in. And anything that is built by a mass producer, one of the major builders, just isn't acceptable. It's okay, you know, I've find myself with very high standards. So the question is, whether to remain in my house or to sell it and build a new dream home. For several reasons, you know, a few reasons, at least for now, we've decided to stay in my house. And it's more, I've decided to stay in my house. Partially for Well, not really for sentimental reasons, as much as, in a way, sentimentally practical reasons. The house, first of all, and when I talk about my dream house, location matters. The house that I own is in an almost perfect location. It's in the middle of Chapel Hill, in town, and I can get up on Sunday morning and walk to three different places for brunch. So I can walk to a grocery store. I can walk, you know, as I say, to a restaurant. And at the same time, it's in a very, well, it sits on Chapel Hill Country Club. It sits in perhaps the most prestigious area in town, which is nice, but that doesn't matter. I don't belong to the country club, and parts of that lifestyle I have a real issues with. Of course, I'm an architect. But it has a just terrific location in town. At the same time, because of the setup of the lot, I've got an incredible amount of privacy. I see here, I have only one neighbor who can even see my house. It's wonderful to have a house that's set back from the street. And really, you can't tell from the street what the house looks like, how big it is, or any of that. If you stand out on the golf course, you can tell. My house is 180 feet long. It's over half a football field long. But from the street, it looks small. And to me, that's a really neat concept. Anyhow, I sit on this lot that has no neighbors except across the golf course. I can see them, but except for that, I'm by myself on an acre of land that feels like it's 4 or 5 acres in the middle of town. So it's just a terrific lot in privacy. And this is an exercise that I'm going through it in part because most people who get married later in life tend to go through this type of exercise. And we're also in a town where, you know, I expect to remain. Chapel Hill is a great place to live. My fiance has some issues with Chapel Hill because it's also, in its way, a bit snobby and highfalutin, and you know, sometimes you can only take so much of that. But there are some really good people who live here, and especially, you know, my near neighbors. Now, the other part of this is that about 8 years ago, I substantially rebuilt the house, and I created this great screen porch with the fireplace on it and this really nice, but especially I created this Zen-like master suite that is really one of the most enjoyable places to live that I think I've encountered. And so the idea of giving that up or recreating it, frankly, it was very costly. That master suite cost $120,000 to create. And, you know, if I move somewhere else, it would cost just as much or more to recreate that level of enjoyable space. The other thing about, you know, the other thing in my house is I work out of my house, which means it has to look impressive. It has to look good for my clients and suggest to them both my level of thought about the work I do, but also my level of success with the work that I do. The master suite. Well, not the master suite. I work out of my house, and I have this incredible office. My office has a fireplace in it, has a 16-foot-tall fireplace wall. It's got two walls of glass that open up onto the golf course. And, you know, I can sit in my office, and it's beautiful. It's all warm woods and oriental rugs and leather furniture and real genuine wood desk. It's just an incredibly enjoyable, nice place to spend your days working. And I can sit in here, I can look out at golfers during the day. I can also look out at the deer standing 30 feet away from me, or a hawk up in the tree. So this is just, for these many reasons, we lucked upon 20 years ago a terrific location, and 8 years ago turned it into a terrific house. And doing the math, frankly, if I sold this house, anything that I bought and moved into and renovated or built from scratch, I'd spend as much money. And, you know, as I said, this is what you talk about when you get married later in life, and how do you blend your lives together, and what are the must-haves and what are the things that, you know, you have to give up. It's not as simple as that, of course. And the decision still is not closed because, of course, my fiance has her own beliefs and her own needs. And speaking now, not as an architect and loving this house and all of that, but the psychology of getting married later in life and combining households. Probably one of the big issues is the extent to which this house that I'm in was also my wife's house. And, you know, and she feels that she is moving into or a guest in someone else's space. So even if we stay here, we have to work out how to combine our households and how to make this her space and her house. And there are a number of ways of doing that. Of course, changing furniture, changing, you know, helps, bringing in her stuff and combining it. Possibly the biggest thing or plus I have is I've got this great playroom that I did for the kids. It's two stories tall. It opens up to the woods and with great windows. My fiance is a near concert level pianist. And she's got two incredible pianos. One of her joys in life is sitting with her children, who are both also incredibly good pianists, and playing a duet. So this playroom, which is soundproofed, by the way, not a plus, is going to become an incredible music room and an incredible retreat within the house for her that is completely and utterly hers. This is part of the compromise and part of, you know, the work of bringing two households together. We're going to go to break, but the other thing I started thinking about is, well, wait a second, you know, break out of all of these chains and all of the, you know, blinders. What if we did sell this house, and what is my dream home today? What is So I started thinking, what is my dream home if I were to build my dream home right now? When we come back from break, we'll get into that.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story, coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to cliffark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to Winning the Dream Home Race.
So, I was reminded over the break that for the most part, when you're making these decisions about where you live and about your home, for the most part, the women tend to lead that and to dominate it, just simply because, for the most part, they think more about their home and it's more important to them. The unfortunate thing for my fiance and years ago for my wife was that I'm an architect. This is what I do for a living, and I spend my days thinking about how to make houses better, thinking about what makes a house really warm and loving and a joy to live in. So the normal thing is for the wife pretty much to dominate the housing decisions and the husband to go along. In this case, you know, I think too much about it. Okay. So I started pondering, what would my dream home be today? And came up with a whole list of categories to consider. The first category is location. A lot of the people that I deal with have basically, they've lived in subdivisions, they've lived in suburbs and even in town, and their dream home is to get away to the country, to buy 10 acres or more. Where I come from, if you subdivide land into a minimum 10-acre plots, then it's a very easy process that takes almost no time, which means the little mini farms out in the country are 10 acres. To a lot of people, that's their dream. To others, the dream is they've lived in the suburbs. Now they want to live in town. So to move back into an old established neighborhood, and I did a show on restoring, renovating, expanding these cottage worker homes in the old established neighborhoods and how to do that and the joys and rewards of it. To other people, you know, their dream home, their dream location is actually in town, in the city. In a way, that's neat. At one point, I wanted to move to Manhattan and, you know, live right in the heart of things. But I can't take that many people now. And if I did have to live in the city, I'd have to have space inside to make up for the lack of space outside. And that's hard to do within the city. Space inside, meaning if you think of a loft in the city, the idea of big open space, at least inside your personal space, to make up for the very close confines outside. Frankly, I like living in town. I really like the idea of being able to walk to a grocery store, walk to a restaurant for lunch. And that's one of the great luxuries of life, I think, is that having that option. I like people, but I don't like people that much. So the quandary is to live in town, but to have privacy. I did a house about 10 years ago. I won an award for the best home design in North Carolina for a house that did just that on a 75-foot wide lot with neighbors 10 feet away from it on either side. There are ways of creating privacy in a small lot. If you think carefully about it, there are ways of, but probably the best option is to find that in-town lot that through nature, through just how it sits and how it sits relative to the other lots in the street, provides you privacy. An architect can really help you find that setup if it exists. And with whatever exists, one of the big issues is taking the lot that you find and maximizing it. I just finished a house for a couple. This is a dream home in my situation. Well, at least moving together down here. And they had, what they commented on when the house is finished and they just moved in was, it wasn't that they had a terrific lot. They had a pretty good lot. But I had figured out how to maximize all of the positive aspects of it and minimize the negative ones. This is a big thing, is get someone who knows what they're doing to maximize the positive aspects of where you are. Anyway, so location-wise, if this is my dream home, let me move more quickly. If this is my dream home, then I think I need to be in town where I have people around me, but I also need my privacy. So that's my dream location. I don't want to be out on 10 acres. I don't want to be that far away from other people and isolated. And at the same time, if you've got 10 acres, you have to take care of 10 acres. And, you know, beware what you wish for. Now, the next big issue in creating your dream home is size. Size is, a lot of the people I talk to now want a smaller home. And, you know, the book 10 years ago, the book, The Not So Big House, became a bestseller. And the whole idea of building smaller rather than bigger, building the cottage, not the McMansion, building for two people, not for two people plus their 10 children, which no one has 10 children. So a lot of people I talk to now want a smaller house. They talk in terms of 1,800 square feet. 1,800 to 2,000 square feet is really a sweet spot where you can get a beautiful house for two people and make it work. You know, make it work. It's big enough, but it's not so big that you're carrying a whole lot. It's not so big that you're carrying a whole lot. However, I think that may be a mistake. If you have the money, I think you should opt for a bit more space. Perhaps if 2,000 square feet, 1,800, just under 2,000, is what you think of as the small cottage you want, I would kind of upscale that, upsize that to 3,000 square feet. And just simply give yourself, allow yourself a little more space. And just for the sheer feeling of spaciousness, space is a luxury. Up until really this generation, space was at a premium, and you know, everyone lived in 1,400, 1,800 square foot houses. Suddenly we're living in 5,000 square feet, but most of that is crappy 5,000 square feet. It's a bunch of boxes. And the idea of building the smaller home as your dream home is to go from 12 rooms, 12 boxes, down to 6. But if it's 6 boxes, it's still 6 boxes. Now, done right, a home is all about the flow and the spaciousness, not about the rooms. Some of the things I love most about a house. Well, first off, building more space is a luxury, but it is not an expensive luxury. The very high quality 2,000 square foot house will cost you about 80% or even 85% of the same high quality 3,000 square foot house. Once you build the kitchen, once you put in the central utilities, once you build the kitchen and the master bath, you've spent the money. What I love, my dream home, is all about space, views, and the flow of space. One of the concepts that works all through my designs is the long view. I love a house that looks 80 feet through a series of rooms and then releases out. I've got on my website the Torsky Beauclair house. This is a small house. It's 2,200 square feet on the main floor, 800 square feet downstairs in the basement. And that main floor is 2,200 square feet. It is three bedrooms and two baths, essentially. But it feels much bigger, in part because when you step into the entry hall, you look from end to end 60 feet through the house and then release out glass. You step into the main living space, this kitchen family room area I talk about, and it's huge. It's 20 by 40 feet. It's 13-foot ceiling. It's really interesting bay windows to open it up to the view. But still, one of the keys in doing a spacious house is the idea that you want to have an openness, but you also want to have a coziness. And that's very hard to achieve. So back to this whole thing I'm talking about is give yourself the luxury of some space. I did a house several years back for a lady who was almost definitely going to be in a wheelchair for part of her life. And it was really for two people, but she has an 80-foot view through the house. It starts in a sunroom, a greenhouse, behind her bedroom, flows through the bedroom without seeing the bed, flows through a gallery hallway to display her art, lit by above by clear story windows, so it's got beautiful light, and then ends up in a big living room that then flows out through French doors onto a porch. This is not a big house, but it feels really spacious and airy. And when you step into it, that I think is my dream home, is one that feels big, feels much bigger than it is because the spaces flow together. And the spaces work together. You're always visually borrowing from the other space. If I can't see the bed in the master bedroom, but I can borrow that 18 feet of space visually, that's a big win. If I use a piece of the house that I have to have anyway, like a hallway, make it a little wider, throw light into it, make it really feel wonderful, and make it open up into the living space, that's a win. That is, so I think where I'm going is that the most important aspect of a dream home is space. And don't constrict yourself and confine yourself just to some ideal. Confine yourself with your budget, true. But even on budget things, go for the space. You can always add luxury details. But you have to have the space up front. And when we come back from the break, I'll give you some other thoughts about my dream home and what I would include. Thanks.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Conservation starts with us. Learn about environmental concerns each week when you tune in to Our Wild World with host Ellie Weiss.
Our show centers on Africa each week and what's being done to save our wildlife, ecology, and ourselves. However, we'll also discuss what's going on closer to home. And most importantly, we'll let you know what can be done in our own backyards by featuring guest experts and featuring your questions and answers. Listen every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Now there's a new destination for video content, VoiceAmerica.tv, just like our radio channels and so much more. Voice America Variety, Health and Wellness, Business, Sports, Green Talk, Power Up Motorsports, and Seventh Wave Network now have their own video channel components. Plus, check out exclusive programming, including movies, music, educational courses, science and history, current events, and short features. High-definition, premier-quality programs available 24/7. VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's CLIPPARCH at yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
If you're going to do your dream home, have fun and do something special. I think that's the bottom line for me. I talked about space and not constraining it. Well, the thing I would add to the nominal spaces that you need to have is that special space, just for the fun of it. In my case, when I built my mountain house, that special space was a tower room. Didn't really need one. Already have plenty of rooms. But I'm an architect. How could I not build a tower? And the views from that tower are incredible. They're the best views in the house. So sometimes you could call it a folly. I've done that tower room, and it's for a Hindu couple, and it's been the perfect meditation space. Done as a perfect pyramidal space. If it's your dream home, create a special space for yourself. If there are two of you, create a special space for each one of you. That could be in addition to what you need. It could be a sunroom that's off by itself. I love the idea of a pavilion in the woods, a sunroom, that's glass on three sides. And you can go there to meditate, or you could go there to do your yoga workout. But it's something special. Another one is a music room. For my fiance, her special space is a music room. And if we were doing a dream house, we would do a dream music room. Or a study. I've done a couple of houses where the special space for him has been a true gentleman's study, with the fireplace, with the green walls, with the wainscot paneling, the bookcases, the leather couches. A true gentleman's study. So, and it can, this special space could be all out of proportion to the rest of the house, because this is your dream home, and why not dream big and dream fun? So, going back and looking through the rest of this, style. Okay, Steve, this is your dream home. What style? Which is a really hard question for an architect. But I think because I am an architect and I'd have to go with the stereotype and do contemporary. Contemporary should have clean, flowing lines and the movement of space into space, an openness and a lightness of breath that is, you know, that can be quite delightful. The question with contemporary, though, is that most of what I see contemporary is cold, stripped down, and somewhat inhuman. The real question and the hard part with contemporary is how to make it warm and loving and still kind of minimalist, but a warm, comfortable minimalist, not a cold, you really don't want to spend time here. And that's what I see too much of and I can't stand. Style, contemporary. The highlights of my house, my dream house, would be, as I keep talking about, it's walls of glass to open up to a site that you maximize. And the Frank Lloyd Wright's concept that the inside of the house and the outside of the house all flow together. My dream house would have to flow in and out very easily. The rooms extend into the landscape, and the landscape flows into the house. I actually designed one house years ago that was never built that had 7 water courses moving through it and 7 waterfalls. And the whole idea of the house and the land all moving together. That's a little too elaborate. But the idea of indoor and outdoor coming together as one space, and obviously in Southern California, that's a lot easier than in Minnesota. Or in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, I could do it, and I've done it. I just had a house published that really does it well with one of these, a corner wall that all opens up from the inside to the outside. The only caveat would be in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is somewhere I'd need an outer barrier of screen. Because while I want the outside to flow into the inside of my house, I don't want the mosquitoes to flow in, or even just the flies. So another trick is, how do you get that flow inside to outside and still keep the bugs out? Anyway, okay, we talked about style, we talked about size. The other part of my dream home is, what materials would I use? And the material that really excites me the most is wood. I love wood. And there's so many ways that you can use it in the house in this natural state. I probably would not build a timber frame house, but I would have timber frame elements in there. I would have exposing thick 10-inch by 10-inch columns of wood is really a great thing in a house. You've got the wood floor. You've got some wood beams. You've got even a wood ceiling. Actually, wood ceilings in the right space are very nice and warm up a space that otherwise could be too cold and contemporary. So exposed wood. I love wood slabs. And the idea of especially live edge wood slabs incorporated into the work. Beyond the wood, the other thing that I think I would build my house out of a material called AAC block. This is autoclaved aerated concrete. And it's conceptually the most ideal building material. And it's a concrete block, solid concrete, but shot with aerated, shot full of closed air bubbles, so that an 8-inch thick block has the same insulation value as an R30 stud wall. And you just build these things up like, you know, like blocks that you glue together to build the house. Very easy to work with. You slap stucco on the outside or stone or whatever you want, slap it on the outside. That's the outside wall. You plaster the inside wall, or you can use sheetrock, but that's it. That's your wall. That's your house. It has a wonderful thickness of material that really speaks to my soul, and a wonderful kind of, you know, it's a natural sound absorption. So the house is very quiet, very insulated from the outside. And the combination of AAC block, this heavy masonry feel, with natural wood, you know, it almost gets back to, I talked about building contemporary. This is how they built 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and 10,000 years ago. With the exception that in between the wood columns, and have walls of glass. So the thick, heavy masonry, the solid, substantial wood, and the ephemeral openness of glass. That I think is how you put this all together. Well, that's what you need a good architect for. And I've looked at some houses recently that I considered, people considered to be their dream homes. Probably the biggest thing that I was affronted by was a lack of understanding of spaciousness. And yeah, they've got the materials, they've got the neat things, they've got all of the gadgets and gadgets and all of the latest stuff. But an understanding of spaciousness and why anyone would build this special room 12 feet wide when you could do 16 feet wide for the same cost. Why you would limit yourself in ways that make no sense. Grab luxury when you can, especially grab luxury when it doesn't cost you anything. And quite often, spaciousness doesn't cost you. Anyway, the other things in my dream home, and very quickly, I look at technology. Frankly, I just talked about how I would build my house to materials, and I really seem to be talking about old-fashioned technology done in contemporary, clean ways. Well, I'm doing a house right now where the owner expects to control the whole house from his iPhone. So everything in the house is wired together, or actually wirelessly controlled together from a central computer. And everything can be controlled from his iPhone. You know, that's, well, lights, air conditioning, security. He can know whether the toaster or the coffee pot is still plugged in and turn it off from San Diego. That sort of technology is fine and great. If I built my dream home, I'd probably incorporate it simply because it exists today. But I'm not thrilled by it. I think that in some ways we have to become more simple in how we live, and any technology becomes obsolete, any technology breaks down. So, technology. Energy efficiency. Just the last probably area is energy efficiency, and it's like duh, why not? If you're building a new house today, I did a show on this, just building to the codes is an incredibly energy efficient house. We are two generations beyond what was Energy Star rated 6 years ago. That's just building the code. So, of course, any dream home that I built would take that and even push it further where it makes sense. Do a cost-benefit analysis. The way the house built to code today will cost you a quarter of the amount of energy that the house built 10 years ago would have cost you. And so you don't have to get into all of the nitpicky little stuff. Some of it you'll find just doesn't work. They're finding that solar hot water heaters really don't make that much fiscal sense compared to a really high efficiency tankless gas water heater. They have other options on most things and use the ones that make sense and, you know, don't necessarily be on the cutting edge unless that's your dream. And if it's your dream, go for it. I have to go. Thanks for listening to my dream, and I'll be talking with you next week.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.